In my bio on the website, it mentions that I teach Qigong and meditation. And I think maybe I should just fill in a little bit why I do those two things. For many years, I sat in meditation halls, and there was a certain anonymity in just sitting. So let me remind you, if you came in a little earlier, my name is Mark Neenan. I'm from Santa Cruz, and we will have some time for, I'll say, some questions and comments. I don't know about answers, but this is a wisdom circle. Maybe there will be some answers. As a new teacher to IMC, as a guest, why don't I tell you a little bit more about what drew me to meditation as well as Qigong. I have a lot of gratitude for the spirituality of my parents and for their teachings, which was Roman Catholic as I grew up in the Midwest in Columbia, Missouri, a university town. And I had a deep training in Catholicism. Latin was my foreign language. Religious choir hymns was my music training. We learned literature and history through the evolution of the church. And I have a great debt of heritage to that. And I really do appreciate a great deal of our current world through that history and understanding of the importance of that particular religion as it goes back to the Old Testament, the Judaic Christian traditions. And then there was also the fact that I was growing up in the show me state. Missouri is a state that has the motto of, you gotta show me. And so I was very open to learning anything that was new. I think I had a crisis of faith in my teenage years. And in 1968, the Beatles were having meditation, transcendental meditation being taught by Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. And so I tried that out, and I got some benefit from transcendental meditation and did it very religiously, just as my good Catholic training would have had me do, for 2 years, and enjoyed the stress reduction and kind of opening around what meditation had to offer. At another time, actually I just woke up one morning and decided, you know, I'm not going to be a spiritual seeker anymore. I'm tired of looking, of seeking. And whatever there is out there, if there is something out there, it's just going to have to tap me on the shoulder. And I think maybe that was a pretty good open attitude to have, especially for somebody in their early 20s. And I finished college, and just kind of on a lark, I decided to travel around the world. And It wasn't the military. It wasn't some big crisis in my life that brought me to my first meditation retreat. It was more just, I was on my way to see the Himalayas, and India happened to be in the way for part of the overland experience. And just on a train one morning, you know, just on a lark. Okay, I didn't come to end suffering or understand my suffering or to suffer, but I was just out there and exploring and open, and met a mysterious woman who was on her way to a retreat, and she didn't want to tell me too much about it and give me any expectations. So I said, okay, I just went. And there happened to be a Burmese teacher named Goenka doing a 10-day meditation retreat. And if any of you know his style, it's very powerful, it's very direct, and it's very strict. And that's a wonderful opening for me. You know, if people ask me what my lineage is or what my teacher is, it's very clear to me. This is my teacher. These meditation practices, everything that Buddha ever came to understand and then later speak and was recorded, it came out of the practice. And part of what he's saying is, it's your birthright. You have the teacher within. All this understanding has come before the person that we knew as the Buddha, will come afterwards. There are more Buddhas. And it will just arise. So, after that first retreat, which was more than 30 years ago, I just enjoyed going to meditation retreats about once a year for 10 days. And then just became a householder in terms of living that life. I was with my life partner, and we have a couple of kids. We've lived abroad. We took the kids abroad. We mostly lived in Santa Cruz as I was raising the family, which is a challenge in that culture. But one that was also open to meditation practices and more training and experience. So I studied with Gil maybe in 1989 or 90, and that's how I first met him. And many of the other West Coast teachers. I also have a graduate degree on my back end, which was in psychology, and so I was a psychology undergraduate advisor at UC Santa Cruz for a number of years. But I got tired of the academics. I got tired of the research. I got kind of tired of helping all these wonderful minds that were just curious, usually traditional college age people at the beginning of their life, to get into the research and the senior thesis and graduate school. And I wanted to go deeper some way with people. And I knew the beginning meditation that I was teaching was helping do that. So I decided to take my young family to England for a year and just study with Christopher Titmus, doing long meditation retreat there, and also studied at a pain clinic there. Just as I got to England, I found out about Jon Kabat-Zinn's work, and maybe you know, but he was at a retreat center, Barre, Massachusetts, where this inspiration came. How can you take the meditation practice out of retreat centers and inject it directly into the population some way? Literally inject it, as in healthcare. He was working at UMass Med Center at the time. and as a prescription. And so over the last 20-some years, Jon Kabat-Zinn has been building research around how meditation helps medical conditions of all different kinds. And so that kind of brings me more current. I'm still working with the university, although for 5 years I left the university and did nothing but teach mindfulness-based stress reduction in hospitals right here, Kaiser Permanente's Redwood City Psychiatry Department, the pain clinic for Sequoia Hospital, further north and south of here, all the way down to Monterey Bay Hospital, Community Hospital, Monterey Peninsula. And after doing that for 5 years, I went back to the university and worked with the university. So I've always tried to integrate, as a life of a householder, my Buddhist meditation practices, what I learn from Buddhist philosophy. As I integrate that into teaching, I teach at Stanford through their continuing education program, of course, in language and process of mindfulness, where we look at how meditation can help us with communication, the right speech. Taught here some nonviolent communication. I co-taught that. A couple of weeks ago, I found myself in an awkward situation. I was with a bunch of theists. I was with the university's interfaith council, representing the Buddhist faith. And so they asked me to put out a little something about the Buddhist philosophy, not too much. And it's a way for the different members, there's a rabbi and very many different ordained Christian groups around this table. And they wanted to get to know each other over a reflection or a question from each other's traditions. And so one of the long-standing members was leaving the council, and I thought it might be nice to bring them the Buddha's five remembrances so that we could, in a reflection of Buddhist philosophy, acknowledge someone's leaving and kind of the truth of that, the naturalness that people contribute for years to the well-being of others, spiritual lives, and at some point they depart, in this case the council. And I thought, I better come clean. I better let them know that I'm feeling a little uncomfortable in this particular setting. I said, I do feel kind of unique here among all of you who have faith, who have a deity, have God, who, you know, the whole name of the council was the Interfaith Council. I said, from my understanding of what the Buddha had to share, he did not say he was God. He did not even say he was the Son of God. Nor did he say he was a prophet of God. He rather just said he was a human. And he said, furthermore, don't believe anything I say. Don't have any faith in my words. In fact, that's one of the problems that people have around religion or spirituality is faith. Instead, anything that I say that's useful to you, that you resonate with, that is true to your own experience, use it, steal it, take it. Anything I say doesn't make sense to you, doesn't ring true inside you, dispose of it, leave it. Kind of coming around to this in part because I was reading Gill's newsletter article on the website to kind of feel a little bit where this group might be, and he's talking about being your own teacher. And I was invoking this evening in the sitting meditation about being your own teacher through your breath, letting your breath teach you what it is that you've come to know. And so then I handed out the five remembrances, and focused mostly on the fourth remembrance. This remembrance is that people will change and we will be separated from them. And in light of what I was saying earlier about if any of these remembrances of the five resonate with you, seem true to you, you're certainly welcome to acknowledge them. They can be a relief to our mind when our mind says things should be other than they are, when loved ones pass away. So I don't want to go too far into this, but I will leave you with these remembrances and the Buddha's instructions about please, no faith, no belief. What do you know from your own experience? And then I'll just kind of leave this open for you. I really... in all my teaching, in hospitals in particular, I realize there's a deep wisdom circle when people get together. And so there may be questions or comments, maybe even answers to any of the instructions for the sitting, or what is this Qigong stuff, or a little bit about my history or the Buddha's remembrances. So I just leave it up to you with a reminder. Yes. Yes. It would be good to maybe just hear these. So here are the Buddha's five remembrances. I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. I cannot escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. I inherit the results of my actions in body, speech, and mind. My actions are the ground on which I stand. I don't really see these as downers. This is a sad story. I see this more as what a relief in every way. Isn't it interesting and intriguing that I'm changing, I'm growing old? My ill health isn't necessarily because I'm a bad person. It's I'm of the nature to have ill health. It's just part of life. This can be quite a solace for people to know if they have health challenges, it's natural. I'm of the nature to die. How precious it makes this moment, this life, this time with anyone that I have, including myself in a room by myself, is precious. And when I'm confronted with the death of a loved one, what a relief it is to know that somehow this is just the natural way of things. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are the nature to change. Makes it much interesting. There is no way to escape being separated from them. Just though your children are born of your body, they will escape you. They will leave. There is a sense of separation, and can we be free in that sense of separation? And through the acknowledgement of that, celebrate our co-arising with all that arises and passes away. There's great freedom and unity in understanding this. I inherit the results of my actions in body, speech, and mind. My actions are the ground on which I stand. You really don't have anything else. This is it. You might claim some of this as your experience in your life, that your actions in body, speech, and mind is what you're inheriting. It is the variable ground of your being that you stand on. If there's anything that's truly yours, I see that as very empowering. And it makes me want to be careful and watchful. So, if you would take the microphone, maybe raise your hand and someone will pass the microphone to you if there's something that you'd like to say.
Is Qigong any different than, I don't know how to say it, Falun Gong, or are they related? Or
they're related, they're cousins. And all of these are meditative movements that help bring the qi up. And there are many, many, many different schools. There are some, there is, among the two schools, one of the big divides is there's a qigong that's sitting. And it's moving the energy around in the body just in a sitting posture. And then there are the schools of all the movement qigongs. There are many. And Tai Chi, and Aikido, and Karate, and many of the martial arts are taking these basic movements and speeding them up and using them for different purposes, defense, offense. Tai Chi is maybe the next step beyond the elemental piece of Qigong. And it's all around here. It's all around Woodman City. You would not have to look very far to find Qigong, Tai Chi, or these movements if you enjoyed them.
So I'm curious, after your first retreat in the Himalayas, how was it?
You know, they give you about a be used to about 5 minutes of reintegration speech. As you leave this retreat, you will not maintain the same concentration of mindfulness and continuity of awareness. And they didn't really tell you what that meant. I just fell in love with the practice. Just to close my eyes and have the silver screen come up and thoughts and emotions and to just watch what happened. I was trained as a psychologist and this was big entertainment. At the end of the first retreat, a woman known as Tina, who's now known as Christina Feldman, came by and said, "You know, if you like this Goenka retreat, there is this fellow that's going to give his first retreat in Goa, India. His name is Christopher, well, his name was Lompi, meaning beautiful or something." And Tina became Christina Feldman and Lompi became Christopher Titmus. And so after the mountains, went back to see Christopher Titmus in another retreat. And for me, the great discipline that I was given from Goenka and the open-heartedness and loving-kindness metta that I was given from Christopher just melded together, and I was able to pretty much experience where all this meditation leads to, and decided then that it would be a part of my life, but not necessarily that I would become a meditation teacher per se. My life was already on a trajectory of sorts. But that I would come back to the West and marry the person I was traveling with and eventually have children and go into the life of the householder. And so then it was, how do you get a retreat when you have children and those kinds of things?
They have to get older. The children get older,
excuse me. Right. We took turns taking retreats. My in-laws took care of the children one time. And so, does that kind of answer your question, or was there something more about it?
No, it's just an interesting journey that you're going on.
Yeah.
What was the mysterious woman on the train, your wife?
It's worthy of a few comments. She was, I was with the woman that would become my wife. We were sleeping together on a wooden bench in the train. And I woke up and I saw this vision. Maybe it was the way the sunlight was coming through that window. But she was a princess. She was sitting there regally in an upright, at ease position. And back in 74, having a nose piercing was new to me. And there was a jewel there. And she was wrapped in sky blue silk with gold threads through it. And just totally wrapped in that. You just basically see her face. So I was drawn to her and I went and started talking to her, thinking maybe she was a Hindu or a native of India. Turns out she was a New York Jewess who had the darker complexion, and she was on her way to a Goenka retreat. And so it was just, I say this, there's purpose. I was kind of on a lark. again, I wasn't necessarily going out there to find it. I had given up that path. And I wasn't driven by the courage or my desperation or the pain or the suffering. And I know a lot of people enter Buddhist training from crisis and from great sufferings and trying to understand things. And maybe that's why I didn't become a classical meditation teacher that way.
Hi. I was just wondering, you mentioned how Christianity or Catholicism was so much a part of your identity.
Yeah.
How did you incorporate that into your spiritual practice now?
Mm-hmm. There were years of reactivity and resistance and anger and upset and anonymity or whatever. The word would be animosity, I guess. And it took time to let go of that. And if any of you read The Secret Life of Bees, there's an element of Catholicism in that story and the wonderful loving kindness. Actually, the whole thing came together at Santa Sabina up here at Dominican College before Spirit Rock when Gil was teaching one of his first retreats. And there was the recognition for me that the Virgin Mary was the Kuan Yin, a bodhisattva of compassion, and explains why I was doing all these retreats in nunneries and monasteries of the Catholic Church out here on the West Coast before Spirit Rock. And what would the Buddha say, you know, about Catholicism or whatever, or somebody who was a devout Catholic who, I think I've made my peace with it. I see there's great beauty and art that was brought about in the name of the Church. I know there's a lot of problems still with organized religions in general. I just kind of smile. I'm kind of grateful for loving parents who cared for me, wanted to give me deep spirituality, and it was a wonderful place to get a start. And there are meditations within Catholicism. There are chants, and there are, incense burning. There are elements. So maybe I should stop here and say that I'm happy to stay longer if people want to talk to me one-on-one, but I want to honor your process as we're coming up to 9 o'clock and maybe turn it back to Maureen here. Thank you for coming.